Blog Talk Radio.
And now a brief message from our sponsor. Reality Books presents Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution.
Good evening and welcome to Booker T. Washington Speaks African American Family Room Forum. We are certainly glad that you who are joining us by way of the global internet are able to take time out of your busy pre-summer afternoon schedules to spend a few minutes in our African American Family Room. And we're waiting for the panelists that actually join us in the studio to come on board. I see we just had one who just arrived. I believe that's Najee from, I don't know if you want me to reveal your location, but if that's you, Najee, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Mr. Washington, you're coming in bad, though. A lot of distortion with your voice.
Okay, I've got a little audio problem on my end, so please hold on just a minute and we'll see if we can't fix that. All right. It might be something in the line. So we're going to try to work on that. Just give me a second. It's kind of unusual because we've never had this problem before. Let's stay there and we'll see if we can't get you on in just a second. Okay, hold on. All right, can you hear me, Najee? Are you able to hear me?
Yes, it's still doing it.
Okay, we're not sure what's going on, so we're going to have to try to work on that. Hold on just a second. In the meantime, we want to try to see if we can get the station to play our commercial.
And now, a brief message from our sponsor, Reality Books.
I'm so sorry, but it looks like there may be some issues back at the broadcast studio, and I hope we can do the show tonight, because I don't know if there's anybody back there that I can contact at this hour to troubleshoot what's actually going on with the sound. Ms. Bianca, we want to welcome you. Najee, I think that's you we saw. Come on. Ms. Bianca, can you hear me?
What's wrong with everything?
Okay, we've got serious.
What's wrong with everything?
With the show, I want to ask you to do me one big favor. If you can hear me, please hang up and give me 10 minutes and dial back in. If you can hear
All right.
me. Please give me 10 minutes to try to work on troubleshooting the sound.
And now a brief message from our sponsor. Reality Books presents Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. The author is Marshall Washington Cabinus Abui, the senior great-grandson of Booker T. Washington. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, a message that will change America. Buy your copy today. $20 is all it costs. plus $5 postage and handling. To order your copy of the book written by the great-grandson of Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, send a text message. Include your full name and how many books you would like to purchase. Send to area code 706-399-5006. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. A message that will change America. Send your text message, including your full name and how many books you would like to purchase, to area code 706-399-5006.
Again, good evening, and welcome to all of you who have joined the Family Room Forum, Booker T. Washington, African-American Family Room Forum this evening. All of you out in the global internet world, we thank you for taking time out of your busy pre-summer evening schedule, or late afternoon schedule, because those of you who are out there in California, it's actually still afternoon out there. It's approaching sunset here in Augusta, Georgia, where we are located at our studio. We did come on for a few minutes, and had a technical problem, but I think it's cleared up now. But I just want to do a check. Thank you for coming back on this. Are you able to hear me okay now?
No, you're still garbled.
I'm still garbled, okay. And that's something that might not be able to be fixed. I hear you fine. Let me try something else. Maybe this might work better. Okay, yeah. How about now? Can you hear me any better?
It got a little better, but still garbled.
Still garbled, okay. It's the phone line.
Wait, you on the speakerphone?
Actually, right now I am, but I had on my earbuds with the mic on there at first, and I took them off, and you said I sounded a little better after I took them off. I'm just talking, I'm using my iPhone.
Did you hang up and call back in?
Yeah, let me go ahead and do that. But you know what? I can't do that. You know why? Because once I disconnect this line, the company that runs the broadcast, they'll figure the show is over and they won't let me come back in. So, but you try it, see what happens if you dial in again. Because I was actually listening on the monitor when I was playing the music, and it was fine.
Message from our sponsor. Reality Books presents Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. The author is Marshall Washington Cabinus Abui, the senior great-grandson of Booker T. Washington. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. A message that will change America. Buy your copy today. $20 is all it costs. That's $5 postage and handling. To order.
Okay, I want to ask you the music and the announcement. Were you able to hear that?
Yeah, they sound good.
Yeah, okay. Well, good, because if it's just me that's garbled, I'm not going to do a lot of talking because you're coming in fine. So hopefully you can hear this, and the people that are listening via the internet can hear this. And I think Nas was on for a minute, and he dropped off. I'd ask you and him to call back in about 10 minutes. And so maybe he will call back in. But let me go ahead for the benefit of our global internet audience. We can let people out there that listen really yeah. And I want to know is there any single issue in your opinion around which African Americans can unite today to improve our collective overall situation, or is it every African American man and woman for yourself? That's the question for tonight. Is there any single issue around which African Americans can unite today to improve our overall collective situation, or is it every African American man and woman for yourself? Now, I just want to mention this before you come on, Mr. Bianca. Now, back in 2008, I'm not saying that because I know you are. I know
Yeah, you was clear there for a minute. What'd you do?
Okay, I just got word that my sound was bad going out on my.
Well, team. For a minute,
so,
for a minute there, when you said my name, you was.
And I'll let you speak.
For a minute there, when you said my name, you was crystal clear.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. Can you say that again?
I say for a minute when you said my name, you was crystal clear.
Yes.
I don't know if you moved something or what the heck happened.
Okay, Ms. Bianca, I've got another phone. It might have been my phone, so sorry for the delay. But can you hear me okay now?
Yeah, you sound like gangbusters now.
Okay, yeah, there's something going on with my phone. I don't know what it was. I had to switch phones, but I'm glad that we've got it straightened out. I'm sorry it took so long. Anyway, let me just repeat the question, because maybe others heard it garbled up too. So the question for tonight is, is there any single issue around which African Americans can unite today to improve our overall collective situation, or is it every African American man and woman for yourself? So that's the question for tonight. I'm sorry it took so long to get where we could get into it, but what are your thoughts on that, Mr. Bianchi?
Well, I'm eating and talking to you at the same time.
That's fine. I don't mind. I hope you're enjoying what you're eating.
But I say no. I say definitely not. And for a simple reason, they all come from different. They are not all, but there's several different backgrounds that exist within this so-called society that you describe as African American. Then also you have to look at those that call themselves black. And those two are different. So if you tried to center it around either one of those identifiers, I still say no. Because listen to them talk, the things they speak on, and I'm talking about groups, organizations. They are not even in agreement in, you know, the questions as posed to either one. What do you think?
Because it goes against my what could be considered, I don't want to say black nationalist, because I don't promote blackism, since I look like I'm probably 9/10 Caucasian if you were to see me in a picture. And when I have been associated with the Nation of Islam back in the past, I felt a little bit out of place sometimes when the minister was standing up on the pulpit or rostrum talking about the blue-eyed devils, because my eyes are bluish green, and I felt like he was talking about me, even though I know he wasn't. So I don't really go by the name Black. As a matter of fact, my driver's license doesn't even say Black. I told him to put other on there so there'd be no confusion. So when the police stop me, they're going to have to make up their mind what I am, because I'm not telling them I'm Black. Because they look at me and say, Negro, you're not Black. You might be something, but you're not Black. Anyway, but I say that because there are many different, as you just alluded to, and I'm just using my own words here, there are many different segments of the population that historically has been considered to be Negro, Black, African-American, whatever you want to call it, because of that, what they call the one-drop rule that was instituted back during slavery days. And even that was kind of a questionable designation, because now they find a lot of people that generations on generations have been classifying themselves as white people. When the DNA test came back, whether that's valid or not, I don't know, to find that they had not just one drop, but they had more than one drop. So what did they become all of a sudden? They become a Negro after generations have been considered white folks? I don't know. But back to the main point, I don't know. I really don't know. I believe that as long as the majority culture, and I'm not saying that the majority culture is a whole big majority, but as long as the majority culture looks at people that are considered to be Negroes, African Americans, or Blacks, whatever we call it, as being in a category, generally speaking, that has not measured up to the potential that others seem to have been making leaps and bounds to develop themselves. I think as long as others see the collective body of African Americans as having these shortcomings, then I think there's no other alternative except for us to try to work with those other segments to try to help them develop. And that may not be possible. I mean, some people may be so far down in the mud that I don't care what you do, they're not coming up out of it. And I hate to feel that way because, to be honest with you, there are parts of this town, this southern quiet town, where I would not venture after dark or maybe even in the daytime. You know, we just had a young fellow, 28 years old, that was on one of the main thoroughfares of this town, which is supposed to be a quiet, hospitable southern town. That's why I decided to move here when I retired from the military. And he was out doing whatever he was doing right around this time of day, maybe a little bit later, and got shot to death. Yeah, and there are neighborhoods where this kind of stuff goes on. And I wouldn't want to be venturing out into those neighborhoods. Now, I live in a very nice, respectable neighborhood, and I doubt very seriously if that kind of activity will ever happen out here. I'm not saying it couldn't, but the typical type of person that moves into this neighborhood, and it's also a mixed neighborhood as well, is not that gangbanger, shoot-em-up type of person. So that group, that segment, I don't identify with them. And I see what you're saying. We're not all the same. So maybe the answer is no, I don't know. I like to believe that, like the American Indians are doing, even though they have 400 or 500 different tribal groups registered, you know, groups and subgroups registered with the Department of the Interior. But whenever I hear a spokesman for any of those people talk, they sound like that they're a monolithic type of ethnicity, even though historically we know they weren't. They were like 2,000 different languages.
spoken when the Europeans came to America amongst the Indians. And maybe even among themselves today, they got a whole lot of different languages. I don't know. Would you like to elaborate on some more? I'm sorry, I didn't hear you, Ms. Bianchi.
Well, you cut off there.
Pardon?
I say you cut off there for a second.
What happened was there was an alarm on his phone, and it stopped the transmission. His phone was so.
You said something about Native Americans, Indians.
Yeah, well, all I was saying was that, you know, those people, even though they have many different tribes with many languages historically and many divisions, they seem to be finding a common ground, even though they're really not monolithic, but they seem to be finding a common ground from which to address their common concerns as a dispossessed people. And I'm saying that there are some things that African Americans have in common, unless they're casting for white, and then they're going to be accepted, you know, just based on whatever criteria the rest of the white people are. But as long as somebody looks at that person and walks into the office and they say, yeah, you know, he's a Negro, automatically there's some people, they're going to put him in a category with some of the other people that he may not even want to associate with, which is not
good. Well, you got blacks do the same thing too.
Say again?
So you have blacks that do the same thing also.
Yeah, well, I'm one of them. I'm not trying to make a big point of being discriminating, or I'm certainly not one that feels I'm better than anybody. But I will guarantee you, if I'm sitting in a restaurant and a family of five people or six or seven people comes in there and they get a booth or an area and they start getting loud, what we used to call country, which I'm not against country. I grew up in a rural area. But, you know, we say country, we mean, you know, just kind of not really acting very, very well prepared to go out into that kind of environment. And they start, you know, making all kinds of noise and being loud and disturbing. I feel very uncomfortable. I wouldn't feel like those are my people. I'd say, hey, I don't know those folks, which probably is not a good thing. Maybe I should go over there and ask them to please quiet down a little bit so we can enjoy our meal. But I certainly would not feel like I was part of that, you know, that I was in that particular ethnicity at that point in time. So it's the kind of, to me, it's the kind of a generally disturbing issue. Because on the one hand, you know, I came from a heritage, you know, where my ancestors, Booker T. Washington and his wife, Olivia Davidson, went among people that had some of these bad habits and tried to train them and lift them up. So when they left Tuskegee and went out into the society, they were at least given the benefit of the doubt because they were civilized.
Well, you know, Booker T. Washington spoke on that Negro that always tried to put the victimhood out there. And you know the line that he wrote and he spoke on. And what he said is true. You've read that before, haven't you?
And I'm a big, big opponent of the victimization mentality. In fact, in my book, which I advertise, you heard advertisement on the program, Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, I make a big point to express my dissatisfaction with this victimization mentality.
This is what he wrote. He said, there is another class of colored people. Of course, you know, that was the popular description. There is another class of colored people who make a business of keeping the troubles, the wrongs, and the hardships of the Negro race before the public. Having learned that they are able to make a living out of their troubles, they have grown into the subtle habit of advertising their wrongs, partly because they want sympathy and partly because it pays. Some of these people do not want the Negro to lose his grievances because they do not want to lose their job. Now, we can relate to that today.
Yeah, and I'm familiar with that. And yes, that. So I'm sure, you know, 130-something years ago, that might have been the crux of it. But today, I think it's something deeper. I think a lot of people are just so, what I would say, lazy, that they don't want to accept responsibility for getting up and going out and producing something to make their lives better. And as a result, they just want to blame somebody else. If they can't get a job, and it's because they don't have the right skill set, they don't type fast enough, they want to get a job being a secretary and the standard minimum typing speed is 45 words a minute, and they can't type but 30 words a minute, and they want to say they were being discriminated against. And instead of going to the typing class or practicing at home to get the speed up so it's even better than 45, they start complaining that somebody's against them because they're black. Well, I don't agree with any of that stuff. You know,
here's another quote by him. Here's another quote by him, the second part of it. He goes on to say, "I am afraid that there is a certain class of race problem solvers who don't want the patient to get well, because as long as the disease holds out, they have not only an easy means of making a living, but also an easy medium through which to make themselves prominent before the public." We can identify that today. Whole lot of them.
Yeah. One thing's very sure, I say, and you and I are in agreement on that. So really, we don't have any others that have joined us. I thought Najee was coming back, and you know, my policy is if we've gotten to a point where we're both saying the same thing to each other over again, there's no need to hold you up from other things you might want to do. And I certainly, you know, appreciate the opportunity to talk with you and share these ideas. We could probably go on and on.
Well, I got a couple of things I want to put in. You know, I was arguing with some people today. I say I had a couple of things I wanted to bring about from experiencing early on today when folks was talking about the lady that the police shot, and they say that she was pregnant. And it's in the headlines. See, these headlines by these news medias, especially some of these black ones like Newsom, The Root, they inflame these headlines. They say a police shot a pregnant woman. Well, the woman said she was pregnant, but her family said that she was not. All right. The woman was struggling, resisting arrest. Did you read that story?
Yeah, I didn't read that one.
Yeah, she was resisting arrest, and I guess a struggle came out, and she got the policeman tasing and tased him. So he pulled his gun and shot her. Then I don't know how many times he shot her, 4 times, 5 times. So you had people saying that he shouldn't have shot her. He shouldn't have shot her that many times. Said he should have shot her in the leg. And which you hate to hear about anyone losing their life. But, you know, you see so many of these instances that cause this backlash and criticism. Then at some point you ask, well, why come these people don't comply? Well, you hear all kinds of excuses about that, too. So, you know, we've talked about this before, and it's the same points that's going to be had and brought out. And as I said before, and you see some cases where I've seen another case where the police was arresting this grown man. Apparently, a father of this child was about 11 years old. And was outside of a project. People come running out, and the man, he was standing there getting arrested. But the boy kept running up, kicking the police. And one lady, and you had several other adults there that apparently didn't see anything wrong with the boy doing that. Then all of a sudden, the boy ran and jumped up on the police. Well, the police didn't shoot him. But why come those other adults did not contain this boy? So
well, let me jump in. I don't want to cut you off, but when you finish, I want to jump in.
Yeah, that was two things, and there's many things. And we're not saying that police officers don't seemingly do things wrong, but it depends on the municipality that they're in, because it's that municipality that sets the policies, rules, and regulations on how those employees behave. They're all not the same. 18,000 police departments across the country, from the northwest to the southeast, from the northeast to the southwest, and all in the middle. So, and you know, here's the thing. I would imagine, and matter of fact, we know that the vast majority of contacts with citizens, black citizens with the police, don't go without any consequences. But it's seemingly that the ones that always are put out there for show, which I understand, I guess it's all right, is the ones like, you know, the last two that I described. But that's the way it is. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Well, we're going to wrap up in just a minute, but I want to respond to that. Number one, a lot of that has to do with children having children and people not being reared in a stable family situation where they get good, what we used to call home training. And, you know, when I was a child, our parents and grandparents and friends of the family would give us advice. As a matter of fact, they would get it into our head, so to speak, figuratively speaking, of course, not to lip off, not to mouth off, not to give the police any trouble if they ever stopped us to say, yes, sir, no, sir, answer their question. Not go off into a long story, but just go ahead and try to get released as soon as we could. Because we knew, and they knew, and everybody knew on my side of town that the police were not going to play with you, that they would just as soon as beat you up or shoot you as talk to you. Back in those days, I'm talking about in Alabama, pre-civil rights, when all the police, every single one was a Southern white man who may or may not have disliked black people, but they certainly weren't going to take any mess off of black folks. And so we were taught, you know, our whole society was based around trying to help us to go along to get along so we would not get killed. Now, I don't believe we were cowards, but we certainly were a lot smarter in dealing with law enforcement and a lot of these young people today. And I think, and I'm not going to give a speech, but I think when you have children that are being raised, now I have to be honest, and I'm not ashamed of it. I mean, things happen in life. But I was raised to some extent in a single parent family. My father left us when I was 13. But by that time, I had learned my basic lessons, and my father and I still had a good relationship. So I respected the fact that him having been a military officer during World War II, he taught me that I had to respect him, I had to respect my mom, I had to respect authority. You know, so I got that home training. So even though I did spend part of my youth in a single parent situation, I had enough of a good start where I had a man in the life, in the child life that I had to give me that type of instruction. But even those mothers like Booker T. Washington, you know, he basically was raised by his mother. His stepfather and him did not get along at all. I'm sure he learned discipline by having to obey his stepfather, because his stepfather one made him have to go to work in the salt, processing plant in the coal mine. He didn't want to do it. He wanted to go to school. So, but the point is, we have so many children today, they don't respect the man that's around the house because it's not their daddy and it's not somebody that seems to really care about helping upgrade the family. That's not always the case, but a lot of times you have these guys just laying around that won't go out and get a job, won't do anything, that's eating up the welfare check or the food stamps or whatever of the mom, and the little kid is just going out there growing up on his own or her own. So that's part of the problem, too. But, you know, we could go on and on about that. But back to the original question, and we're going to wrap up. I personally feel that there is one single issue, now that we've been talking for a while. I was a little ambiguous at first. And I think that is a good home training. I think at every quarter, whether it's the schools, the churches, any type of organization, or any type of contact that older people have with younger people, we need to take some time. If they're not so rowdy that they want to beat up on us just because we're trying to talk to them, and explain to them the facts of living in America, you know, walking wild black, as they say, that they better learn how not to be doing the kind of things you just talked about, because that's a sure recipe for getting killed. You know, I don't know what caused that woman to have to get shot four times just because she was trying to tase the police one time. But obviously he saw that was a threat that he had to take her all the way out. Shame that that had to happen. But anybody that's going to put any kind of weapon out on the police is certainly committing suicide. And that
well,
boy,
yeah, they are.
Yeah, I mean, no doubt about it.
Let me ask you a question. What are you afraid of? Name me one thing that you're afraid of.
You know what?
Just one thing. I mean, spiders.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you. I'm afraid of getting burned up in a fire. Because I actually have been burned in a fire. I'm not going to go into the details. But I have a scar on my arm, that's a memento, you might call it, of that incident. And as far as I'm going to go with that. But the fact
okay.
that it is, that's my fear. God knows I don't want to get burned up in a fire.
Okay, well, you know, there's people, apparently, that's not afraid of fire because they have elected to become firemen.
Right.
So that's two different things. That's your fear and another person's non-fear. So, when you hear folks say that this police officer did not have to shoot the person that many times, well, you don't know what their fear level is. You know what
yeah.
I'm saying? Some people, some folks would be able to feel confident that they could handle a large degree of their threats with their hands. And to go on to say that the person should have had a billy club and all that thing, well, that's just assumptions. And I'm not saying everybody, but you got some that when you make reference and question responsibility, then they want to attack you. You know, and
I agree
you,
with you. We're on the same page. Absolutely, I agree. Let me just mention this. Just to underline what you just said, Ms. Bianchi, when I was on active duty in the Navy, I was stationed on a Navy shore base, and about once a month on a Saturday night, I had shore patrol duty. It wasn't my regular job. I wasn't a military policeman, but I had that duty once a month. And myself and another sailor, I was an enlisted sailor, a petty officer, we would have to ride around, or walk around, really. Most of the time, we'd be on foot. The chief would be riding around in the truck, and he would give us orders to patrol around the enlisted club and out there in the parking lot to make sure nobody was going to be breaking in people's cars or drunk, getting in fights and this kind of thing. And the only weapon we had was a billy club. But I will guarantee you, and I am not a meanie, I am not a belligerent person, and I'm certainly not a sadistic person, but I will guarantee you that if I told somebody that was sitting down in the middle of the parking lot to clear out of the parking lot, and they jumped up and tried to attack me, that person would be going down real fast. And I'm sure that my partner, if he was right there standing with me, he would have given me total assistance. And that
that's what I'm talking about. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. You know, like when I make mention about the kid that got killed in Florida, Mr. Martin. And we know what happened. But when I gave a solution, I said, well, he should have ran home or went to somebody's house and knocked on the door. Is that not what you teach your young kids? That when strangers are attempting to accost them, that they supposed to holler and also run? If you have to go knock on somebody's door, run in a store. You know, if you was coming out of a store like a gasoline mart and you had parked there on the parking lot in your space, and just as you opened the door to exit the place, you looked over at your car and you see several black males standing around the car. Well, would you go over there? Or would you wait there in the store and see what's happening? If you seen some sitting a car parked next to yours with males in it, would you go get in your car haphazardly? Or would you wait and see what happened? Do you expect a woman to proceed to go get into her car when that type of presence is around? Well, I taught mine that when you see that, well, don't go to your car. Wait and see what's going on. That way, you don't have to encounter those things.
Exactly. Well, I'm the kind of person, if I'm driving down the street and three blocks ahead of me, I see about four or five cars with flashing blue lights. I'm not going in this direction. I don't think about the detour. I hope to be there and block that running or jumping in the street.
Absolutely. You're kind of breaking up again.
No, okay.
But
well,
that's better right there. And I agree with you because I have been driving down. I come to a stop sign and I look up ahead and I see a car parked, stopped in the middle of the street. And apparently people are standing on either side, leaning in the window, talking. Well, you know what? I carry a weapon. I will turn, make a left turn, go a block, make a right turn to go around that, then try to maneuver my way through it. And I carry a weapon.
That makes good sense to me. Well, I don't carry a weapon in my car. I believe in home defense, but I don't carry a weapon in my car. And I, maybe one day it might come to that. But right now, I just try to stay out of those areas and like you drive around in problem situations so that I won't have to be confronted by somebody that might require me to second guess or think about maybe I should have something.
So if I approach the car and I'm going to sit and I blow my horn, they might get pissed off. But if a policeman approached the car and tell them to move on and they don't move on, well, guess what? Now you got a problem.
A big problem.
If I tell them to move on and cause I need to get by and they don't, well, what am I supposed to do? Pull my gun and tell them to get the hell out of the way?
Now then you'll be in trouble.
Absolutely. That's the way it works.
Yeah.
So you avoid those things if you think that, and we don't talked about this 100 times, if you think that something is not going right accordingly, well, you don't have court there on the street in the scene.
That's right.
Comply, take the summons, then go from there with your lawyer or whatever.
Absolutely. Well, we're all, I guess, on the same page, you and me, that is. You're the only one that's on live tonight. So we're going to go ahead and wrap up. Certainly, if you want to make this a comment, go right ahead. But afterwards, I'm going to go ahead and wrap up. Sorry for the technical difficulties we had tonight. Some things I don't have the power to control, but not making an excuse. But hopefully next week everything will be back to being fine. Did you want to make a closing comment, Mr. Bianchi?
Well, it looked like we're getting ready to go into summertime. And hopefully everything goes fine. But
yeah,
that's about all. I guess I'll see you next week. I'll be back up north next week, hopefully.
Oh, okay. Okay, well,
and,
I look forward to every time that we get together in the family room, as I call it. So have a good, safe trip going back up that way. And I look forward to talking with you, hopefully, on next Saturday.
All right. See you later.
Okay, take care. Good morning.